Hey, everybody, welcome to my podcast. And today's guest is none other than Frederick Lehmichen. You may wonder who he is. Freddie is a good friend of mine, but he also is a former next Dirk Nowitzki prospect. And today we talked a lot about that topic, which is very important for prospects, upcoming prospects, and former prospects. We talked about mental health. We talked about what is necessary for prospects to have in their environment, and how he approached life after basketball as well. I think there's a lot of valuable lessons in this one. He's a rather unknown name, but in the inner circles of basketball and the hardcore scouts, the hardcore coaches from the past, they know who he is and they know his path. And today he was very genuine and open. And I think everybody can gain something from this conversation. So please share with prospects who are up and coming, please share who may struggle players who may struggle after their careers. I think there's a very, very informative podcast there for everyone to listen to. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe to this podcast. We keep going. We don't stop. We keep bringing in guests and become a subscriber and hopefully listen and talk to you soon. Bye. Freddie.
Hey, Bennett.
Welcome to my podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I know.
Congratulations. It's going pretty good.
Yeah. I decided to not prepare as much just because we know each other so much. So I'm just going to freestyle today as much as possible. I did prepare some topics, but we're friends and we go way back, way, way back, as people say. But for the people who don't know who Frederick Lehmichen is, people will ask themselves. I mean, they will see the header on the podcast, what it's about, but who the hell is Frederick Lehmichen? So they're gonna ask themselves that. So why don't you give us a breakdown of who you really are, your true self?
Yeah, well, most people call me Freddie, so that's maybe a more common name. Yep. I'm now 35, going on 36 this year, and I'm a former prospect, as you would call it, and also play professional in several leagues in Germany. That's about it, actually. So I don't know how way back you want to go.
we will unwrap this present while we go after it here in this podcast. But we also, before we dive a little bit into your past, because you speak fluent English and people are going to say, oh, this name is not congruent with a fluent English speaking person. Mm-hmm. But you can break that down after we talk about our common past, because we have a common past and we worked together after your prospect times, let's call it, into like professional life in the second division. When you were starting your comeback, what do you remember from our times in Cuxhaven when I was your assistant coach and the young assistant coach who got into the arguments with his father as a head coach? What do you remember the most from our time together there?
Well, first of all, I remember that it was a very exciting time playing in the new league, the Pro A. It was the first Pro A league, as far as I remember.
Yep.
And also, I remember it being a very thankful time as far as having a second chance with a new environment, because as you mentioned, I played for Frankfurt in the past, which was at the time a very great club, won a German championship during my time I was there, and played in the Euro League, the ULEP Cup back then, and it didn't go as people predicted it would go, or as I maybe have hoped it would have gone.
For you personally.
For me personally, I would say for me, but also for people that have been watching me and have evaluated me as a prospect. Cuxhaven just felt like I was able to be around and be surrounded with people that just wanted to have fun, have a great time and success, and start something new. Basically, that's how I felt. And I really felt as part of a great team and organization back then. That's what I remember. And I also remember us having the first talks and first meetings together, first workouts. And I was really, looking forward to working with you because you could tell you were more of a player's coach at the time as being a real coach. And I guess that's something a lot of players appreciate if you have someone on the sideline that totally understands what you're going through and what your heart is all about when you're on the court. And because sometimes coaches, you know, have different visions and goals for the players than the players itself. So even though you did get in some arguments with your dad at the time, I think that it was the right mixture of you and him basically finding the right balance for the players. And I mean, we worked together for 3 years and we won. We didn't win the league, which was a bummer, but we still finished second and we were officially moving up to the first league in 3 years, twice. So I guess that's a great achievement for what we had. And I don't know what the budget exact was, but I can tell that it wasn't the highest budget by far.
I mean, this we did have, obviously we had success and I did get in my fair share of arguments with my father, but also got a fair share of arguments with you and with some other players, because I was still, as you said, I was a player's coach. I still consider myself that whenever I do coach, because I don't coach full time, obviously, but because I finished, I was really young at that time. I was like 26, something like that going on. And, you know, at that time you still want to play and you feel like you're more a player than anything else, obviously. And I could relate the best to players than to coaches. And that's, I think that's still the case. But in any way, I do remember you coming on, and I do remember you coming on as like a huge, prospect for us at a different stage of your career, prospect wise.
I was 20 years old. Yeah, I was 21 years old, going on 21. Yeah. So yeah.
And it's like you already had experienced so much at the age of 21, where you actually were thinking already more like a veteran because of what you went through at an early stage. So digging into your past, we can go into a little bit of your time in Bremerhaven before, because your father is American, your mother is German. You speak fluent English, obviously. And at some point of your career, when you were growing up in Bremerhaven, you did gain more attention. Do you remember the time whenever it first started happening, as in terms of like, this guy is the real deal and the next star in the rising?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 6'11", so I'm tall. And being a teenager, I was always the tallest, in school. And I started playing basketball when I was about 7 years old. So that was another coincidence that I just started playing because my older brothers were also playing in the club back then. And street ball was like the thing that was kind of popular at the time. I was lucky enough to be tall, but also be starting playing basketball at a young age. And we had a lot of, in the youth back then, we had a lot of, let's put it this way. I played all positions, starting from point guard all the way to center, because most of my teammates, they really didn't last in the club, and they just kind of jumped between different sports. So we always had new teammates coming in. And at a certain point, that made me responsible because I was the only one always sticking with the club and basketball. So I was kind of forced to play all positions, which was a great thing in the end, because I was able to work on my skill level without really knowing what I'm doing there. So when I was about, I would say, 13 years old, that's when I started playing for the first outside clubs. Bremer Landesauswahl was the term back then. So that was the first achievement.
Like regional
from the state,
selecting.
Basically. Yeah. Yes. So that's where I gained the first attention. And
you were how old?
I had other 13.
Okay.
Yeah, 13. And also So I had the first local teams kind of like asking me if I wanted to, you know, move to a different team or something. And also Bremerhaven, the club at the time, they were very ambitious as far as they found some sponsors that were also very, I would say, looking forward to having a professional team in Bremerhaven. So it just fell in place at the time for me. And I think the club played in the second division back then. And then they hired a Lithuanian coach and who was able to actually move up with the team to the first league, although that was 1 year after I left the club. So I was able to practice with the professional team at an age of 15, maybe. I was part of the national team in Germany, the juniors, but I wasn't really ready yet to play at a high level or even practice and compete on a high level, because I was just playing for the fun of the sport and the passion that I had. So you would see me in the gym over the weekend. I was a referee. I did scouting reports for the professional teams. I watched different games. So everything was always about basketball at the time. Mm-hmm. And I signed my first professional contract when I was going on 15 years, which is common in Europe now, signing a young contract or signing a contract when you're at a young age. And that year, it really felt like, oh, this is going to be the real deal for me. And coincidentally, that year was when all the big teams all of a sudden started coming up and asking me for a tryout and invited me and my family to come over and check out the facilities and everything. And I remember that I talked to the head coach back then of Bremerhaven if I should go to some of these tryouts. And he actually encouraged me to go to the tryouts, Alba Berlin back then, or Cologne, or Frankfurt, Leverkusen. So those were all the teams, even Madrid, Estudiantes Madrid back then. Those were all
big time teams at that time. They were big time teams. Like, I mean, all those teams, even Cologne, for people who don't know, at that time, it was a very, very prosperous club.
Yes, yes. So all of them asked me to try out, and it really made me feel so comfortable. The greatest hotels and a nice stay, dinners and everything. And I come from a very, an environment that is not really, I wasn't spoiled as a kid, let's put it this way. We didn't have a lot of money. So that was also a new world for me. And being able to make money at such a young age actually helped me support my family, or my mom, especially at the time, with a little, with some money at the time. So yeah, so my coach back then, he encouraged me to just gain experience and see what all the other teams have to offer and just compete with other players, not thinking that I would actually make the move and go to another team.
He shot himself in the foot a little bit.
Yeah, well.
But it happens. It happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's in the end, it was still the right move for me. So I decided to go to Skyliners Frankfurt at the time. Opus Skyliners was the name. Mm-hmm. Now they're the Fraport Skyliners. And they weren't in the league that long yet. I think 2 years or 3 years at the time. And they had big plans and very American environment. So that's kind of like what motivated me to move to Frankfurt and leave Bremerhaven, my hometown.
Well, sure, your affinity to American culture was probably also a encouragement for you to go there. I mean, you felt probably a little bit more understood or maybe more in tune with Frankfurt at that time because of that?
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, at the time, Gordon Herbert was the head coach of the team. They hired Simon Cody, American assistant coach, Stephen Klaus.
Another good friend of ours. Shout out to Simon.
Yeah, Simon. Great guy. Yeah. And then Stephen Klaus, also American. And plus the bases and all the American cultures around Frankfurt, the city. That's kind of like what I felt more comfortable than going to maybe a Serbian head coach with a Serbian staff and so on, because culture wasn't really what I was used to at the time. you know.
So let me ask you this. For those, first of all, the Lithuanian coach, for people wondering, because I have a lot of listeners from Lithuania, there's Coach Sakalauskas, mm-hmm. who was at the time, came afterwards and moved the team up. But
it was very successful with the club too.
Yes, yeah. Especially the mm-hmm. first year in the Bundesliga was very successful. Mm-hmm. They made it all the way to the semifinals. But because they lost to Berlin, I remember that. It was like game five, they lost. Mm-hmm. But you were talking about how it sounded very passionate. You were refereeing, you were all day in a gym, you were writing scouting reports. Then you could feel that you were getting more attention, you were getting more invites and offers. And then do you remember a moment where it went from passion to non-passion or to work? Is there was there a moment within that time span of your first years as a primetime prospect? Before we go into the next Dirk Nowitzki topic, I wanted to talk about that, because it sounded like there was it went from clearly pure passion to non-passion, let's call it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's put it this way. In Bremerhaven, my hometown, I was able to just keep doing what I've been doing all my childhood, play basketball and be surrounded by basketball people and also make money. So that was great. Mm-hmm. And I was so gifted and talented. And I can say this really with confidence, because I would say all of Europe and even NBA scouts, they confirmed that, that I was skilled and there was a lot of talent in me.
Absolutely.
Because at the time, having a like not 7-footer, but 6'11", 7-footer, who can actually dribble, shoot, that was a rare thing at the time, and play with the face towards the basket instead of being the typical big guy, you know? That was something that I just saw as a gift, where I would make money through my passion. Mm-hmm. Then when I signed the next contract with the Skyliners at the time, I guess it really wouldn't have made a difference with what club I would have signed. Mm-hmm. It just felt like the first practices, the first workouts that I had, the first talks with all the coaches and staff around me, it really felt like, oh, this is serious. Like, mm-hmm. they're paying me money. They're hiring all these other young prospects at the time, and they're putting a lot of resources into this program, and they're expecting something. Like, they mm-hmm. didn't put it at like we're going to expect something this year, but just the fact that they would maybe sign or have an NBA buyout in your contract meant that they were about business and not about mm-hmm. what's the best for Freddie as a person, right? Mm-hmm.
So and you felt that burden right away? You felt that
no, was... no. Mm-hmm. I guess that was kind of a process that I went through. But it was I had a great coach from the youth team back then, Milo, a Croatian guy. He was all about really developing young guys, showing them discipline and being respectful towards others. And I remember him being really a great support at the time. But he was also a tough coach in his own ways. Mm-hmm. So, and I wasn't used to that, having someone that was, or having coaches all around me that just saw me as one guy out of a lot of other players. And well, I would say the first year, I was 16 at the time. Felt like we're going to school, you practice twice a day, you got maybe two, sometimes three games a week, a weekend. Then also during your school holidays, vacation, you would go to all these national team camps, all these international camps by other organizations. And it really felt like you're getting all this attention from sponsors, from brands, from agents and everything. And it's just like a huge bubble that you're in and you're not used to. And basically the only thing you really want to do is play basketball and have fun, but it was more like a job at the time.
Was it distraction? So, was it a distraction? Because you had a contract with Nike as well. And for a long time you did have Nike, right?
It was an unofficial thing that I had. It wasn't like a contract that I had. I remember Reebok that was also thinking of signing a contract with me. It was like I went to the Euro camp, I played at the Basketball Without Borders. I remember a Nike representative being at the airport, handing me a bag to wear maybe some Nike clothes and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Did that become a distraction when it was just too much, or was it something that you just kind of handled like with, because what I'm trying to get after is that, is it personality based, or is it something that is just across all prospects the same burden that they feel at some point, or pressure or whatnot, or is it more personality based?
I would say, knowing who I am now and what I went through in my past, I would say that it's a huge thing, like what your personality is about. Like, there are a lot of players out there that probably went through the same thing that I went through, or even more attention, and they were still successful in their careers. But on the other hand, I wouldn't say that I was distracted, but the whole environment that I was in was just too much for me to handle, where I didn't know what this whole old thing meant. Mm-hmm. So I really think that it was maybe too early for me to leave home. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And when I did leave, although I had great support of a lot of people that I'm still in touch with until this day, great friendships, but it's still not a replacement for your family and your safe environment. So I would say that's something that a lot of clubs and scouts and agents should really consider to get the maximum out of their players. Is it the right timing right now? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to evaluate that, because that's the toughest decision, but I'm pretty sure you can't compare every player and put them in the same program and it's going to be the same result at the end.
Especially, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, especially if you, because I was more of a sensitive guy, where I guess I was never the troublemaker on a team. I always followed the rules. I would say I was kind of a smart player. I could read the game, but I was never the guy that would get onto other players, or you would get in conflicts with, like, in a deep way. It was more that I just didn't feel the fire that it really took to get to the next level at the time. And that's something, because I was probably busy not realizing that, you know, you're not going to meet your other friends that have nothing to do with basketball, or you know, having success on the paper might not necessarily mean that you're successful on the court or in long term, right? So that's just something I realized in the end, that I was just not made or fit to work in a professional sports environment. And maybe we're going to talk about it, maybe not, but looking at who I am today, I've proven myself that I'm able to actually fight through a lot of things. I finished my master's degree, although back then during my career time, nobody would have thought that I would actually finish with a real school degree or high school diploma or anything.
Yeah,
because I was really a big failure in school. So I finished with my master's degree. I worked my way up, and now I'm a COO of a little agency here in Hamburg, and you know, we have a team of 12 people, and I'm very, very proud of what I've accomplished, and I've proven myself that in the right environment and doing something that I really want to do and not other people expect me to do, I am capable of doing great things, you know. And it's just, basketball is still my passion, and it always will be, but on a different level, I guess.
Yeah, we'll talk about more about that that life after basketball. But before we do get to that, and on the like your timeline, do you think when you were talking about now your personality and the timing was not conducive with the environment you went to be successful? Do you think that things would have turned out differently, and you would have had that developed that fire and got the fire that is necessary to be successful if you would have went later and left home later as a developed personality, and then had more success or more of a longer basketball career at a higher level, if you would have had more mature personality to leave that environment and go into a more professional environment? Or it would have been the same either way, and you would have, I mean, it's hard to say if you would have been here anyways, but Do you think you would have been successful as a basketball player if you would have left as a developed person?
To be honest, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Good. I mean, honestly, you feel it inside more than anybody else.
Yeah. Just because I know who I am and I know what, when am I motivated? When am I ready to actually go the 120% that it takes to achieve something? And I'm really pretty sure that I would have been more comfortable in Bremerhaven, and I would have been the newcomer superstar, maybe not, I don't know. But in the end, I wouldn't have probably not worked any different and harder than I did at a different place. Maybe I would have avoided other struggles. Mm-hmm. For example, being torn out of your environment, your family, your surroundings. But at the same time, I wouldn't have met a lot of people and inspiring people that would have maybe opened new perspectives at a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like going to Frankfurt at a young age and then, you know, taking yourself out of the environment, it's like a tornado inside of you that you're going to have, mm-hmm. you had to deal with. But do you remember the first time that you got this next Dirk Nowitzki tag? Because as you said earlier, there was other players that were successful, they had a career, mm-hmm. but it was like Dirk Nowitzki's draft was 98 and you signed like in 2003, maybe 2003,
2002.
Okay. So it was really close to each other. And it was like this big Dirk Nowitzki era coming up. Right. I mean, and it was attention. Do you remember the first time that you received this tag? Because there was also, as we talked before, it was Tim Olbrecht and Peter Faeser, who actually got drafted as well. So But do you remember the first time you got this tag and how it made you feel?
Yeah, actually, it was the first year I went to Frankfurt. I had articles written about me in basketball magazines, reporters calling, and even I remember as a 16-year-old having, you know, my first Regionalliga game in front of, I don't know, 500 people or so. And I scored maybe 20 points, but I also lost the game. Because coach said we're going to play zone, and I manned up. So that's part of being a young
classic
player, I guess. Yeah. But still, I remember a lot of people being in the stands that were just curious. Who is this guy? Like, who is Freddie Klimishin that everyone's talking about? And that year, you know, I had photo shootings. I would say the year 2002-2003 was where I really got connected with Nowitzki in a big deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you feel like it made you, was it an extra burden? Was that something that you clearly felt was a difference in your day-to-day interactions mm-hmm. with people and it opened up a different, let's call it mind shifting experience, a little bit more different stratosphere?
Mm-hmm. For sure. I would say on the one hand, I did feel, it's a professional basketball team that I played for. So obviously their expectation is they want to, develop me to the best player possibly. So they would be successful and maybe even, make money.
Yeah, of course.
So that was the one thing. So I felt like, oh, I gotta pay them back in a certain way. Like they're paying mm-hmm. for my apartment, not a car at the time because I was too young, but I even had a driver back then that drove me to school and picked me up. And so everything that was basically paid for, that's the first burden because I'm just a very thoughtful person in a way that I do think about a lot of things, mm-hmm. even when I go to bed until this day. But also, when I played in lower leagues, you know, being with the farm teams that Frankfurt had at the time, no matter what league it was, it could be the fifth league, the second league, the third league, whatever it was, I felt like everyone is watching me and they expect the greatest things from me on the court. maybe even without them thinking that. It's just what my personal belief was, that even when I would warm up, people would, you know, stare at me and look at me. So I felt like I really got to prove all these people what they're expecting from me. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I, that would have maybe helped me, that being maybe not on the radar as much, because I know a lot of players that were like not even known at the time yet, and have become national team players afterwards, because they were just like not as talented as a young age yet. Mm-hmm. And I was probably too young and too many teams, because at the time Germany didn't have as many prospects as they have now. So I would say it was just a mixture of expectations that people did actually write in articles and maybe say in meetings. Mm-hmm. Plus, I just felt like I need to prove all these people that they're right about what they're saying.
And I mean, and it's just for people who are listening and don't know, haven't seen you play, like you really, really were purely talented. It was naturally gifted talent, plus the skill level at that point, because you could shoot the three. It's very conducive for today's basketball. And at the age now 35, like you really could be still like towards the end of your career, be playing to an extent, I suppose. But you were shooting the three, you were passing the ball, you could dribble, like all you said. So I can only imagine NBA scouts looking at it, and the hardcore fans, hardcore scouts could still probably remember you from the big man camp, from Treviso. But let me ask you this: like, would you say it's the scout's job to, now with the mind that you have now, with the experience and reflecting, is it the scout's job to recognize that this guy, even though he's purely talented, that he doesn't have that that extra drive that's needed? Is it even possible to recognize that, or to gather that information, or is it something that even that kid wouldn't know, that he doesn't have it?
Right. So, I mean, you know better what a scout does on a day-to-day basis, but I'm pretty sure what his main job is to gain as much information of his environment, of his coaches, family, friends, if possible, other people that know him, just to get a good picture. So I would say that probably the teams and the coaches and the managers that are responsible for the kid, those should be the ones that the scout should trust the most, which I'm pretty sure they do at a certain point. So I would say it's more their job than the scout's job, because the job of a scout is to evaluate what he sees and what he hears.
But is it even possible to recognize that this player doesn't have that edge? I mean, with some players, you can see in certain situations that the edge is not there, and there's like not diving on the floor, not fighting, not having that fire in their eyes. But you did have fire in your eyes. You did also get, you know, into arguments, not only with me, but also with the referees. So, I mean, you did care for the game, and obviously you still care, because we're going to talk about it later, what you still do. But in terms of during that juvenile years, let's call it teenager years, do you feel like it's unrecognizable, or is that something that because you didn't even know at that time that you didn't have it, right? You were so concerned about the external environment that you were just worried about meeting everybody's expectations, but you didn't know if you had that extra 10%, 5% that it takes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, let's put it this way. There's so much money involved nowadays in professional sports overall, not just basketball, but overall. And NBA teams, European top teams, they put so much resources into scouting, video analysis, having agents, consultants, whatever. And I'm pretty sure that maybe investing a tiny little bit of that money to find out, maybe through a personality test, a psychological test, go more the scientific way from a different perspective, that maybe these aspects might even help to find the player that you're looking for, or the player that could be in that certain prospect. To be honest, I don't know how to find out, but I mean, looking at it from a regular job perspective, there are so many ways to find out if the person that you're trying to hire is the right person, as far as thinking logical, being emotional, being empathetic, being a team player, or maybe more a selfish guy. So I'm pretty sure in a scientific way, there are ways of finding out if a player has certain character, like characteristics that might actually, that are needed in a professional sports way. I don't know how and what it could be, but I'm pretty sure there are ways to find that out. Yeah, and I'm not saying that you're going to be free of any failures or you're going to be right all the time, but at least you did your homework, you know?
Yeah, there is some personality test, and maybe it's probably even more interesting to get a personality test that doesn't have to do with sports. It's just a regular personality test in terms of maybe there's a bigger database to take from to understand which direction this person is going, if this personality is suited for that environment, for a sports environment, if it's suited for a competitive environment or not. I think there's something that you can do. It is you just have to pick the right company that does tool. It that has the correct resources for that. But you mentioned environment, and you mentioned a little bit of the prospect's surroundings. What do you think is necessary and the most important thing that you felt like maybe you were missing, lacking at that time, or something that clubs have to really invest in as a club into the prospect to help the prospect flourish and feel safe? Is there something that you remember from that time? Then not even the club, maybe there's an agent, or maybe from the agent side, maybe from the environment itself, from your family side, there's something that is really important and key for a prospect to have.
Family is a very important thing that you mentioned. So I remember being in Frankfurt for roughly 4 years. My family background is just where there wasn't the support that I might have needed from my family. There was not much money involved. So even little things as far as just buying a train ticket to visit me might be a little burden, right? Mm-hmm. So, but still, it's family is something really important that I did notice a lot of my teammates, players that were part of the organization, young players, they had a lot of support. Like they would have family members, moms, dads, whatever, that would visit them on a regular basis, watch games if they're not far away from where they live, maybe cook for them, be there, buy furniture, make your home feel more like home and not like a room where there's some furniture in it. There are so many little details that could make a huge impact, in my opinion, of making a player feel comfortable. And the next thing that I really believe in is that you need, I don't want to say a family replacement, but maybe a mentor kind of person that's fully focused on the player and only there for midnight calls. Hey, I don't feel good. You know, tomorrow's the game. I don't know if I'm going to be able to, you know, match the expectations or whatever. And it could be a coach. It could be someone out of the club's organization that's just a professional in what they're doing or whatever it is. So I'm pretty sure that having people around you that don't always want you to be the best athlete possible, but also be the best person as possible, is something that I really believe in is going to have a huge impact, a positive impact on a lot of young prospects that are not really sure what's the right path or direction they should go to.
What about a mental coach?
Yeah, a mental coach, but don't forget that having a mental coach also means that you need to be ready and volunteering in what you're doing to fully understand and actually execute what the mental coach is trying to teach you. So if you're just doing it because maybe I went to mental coaches, I went to psychologists that were specialized of coaching athletes, but I went there because people told me to go there and not because I thought it would be something that would really help me, especially being 16, 17, 18, where a little love letter from a girl that lives around the block could distract you all of a sudden and you're not really sure what the hell is going on here, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's just how it is, yeah.
I'm thinking just sometimes the prospects get also too much attention from that, make it too comfortable. And then there's also not an environment created for them to fight through to fight through adversity, to fight themselves through adversity, you know, because then you make it maybe too, not too easy, but too comfortable in many ways. I think you just have to provide them with tools like that for them to, sometimes they're not able to recognize which tools they need at that time, but maybe a mental coach, not make mental coach a absolute must, but a presence for them to really approach and talk to. But that that mental coach, the team has to have full time around, and it can't be just here and there. It has to be somebody who understands the team dynamics, who understands the people individually, and has to be with the team 24/7, just as a staff member. I think that's the only way that you can also make those prospects ready for the competitive environment. Especially with the media attention they get with social media. We talk about it a lot of times as well, with the social media aspect of how much attention the people get, just general people. I can't even imagine athletes. So you have to have that that side voice that tells you this is real, this is not real, help you kind of fathom everything that's going on.
Right. Plus, it needs to be someone that you trust, right? I mean, it's also, that's also something that I'm aware of. A person like you described, him or her, is a person that costs money and is going to take money away from hiring maybe a new assistant coach, individual coach, or a player or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's, of course, a luxury having a person like that on your staff. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, it's just now that we're talking and it's something, if we could make a wish, maybe that would be something that teams and clubs should look into a little more, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, in the end, I'm pretty sure they would maybe not have 1 out of 10 players make it to the big leagues. Maybe they would have 2 out of 10 players. Mm-hmm. Plus, they would maybe have 4 out of these 10 that would be better persons and better people, and maybe have a different impact on your youth program, or maybe stick with the club or go to a different club and then, you know, stick with the sport itself. So maybe there are other advantages out of that.
Yeah. You have to, as a club, you have to give yourself a chance to be, to give, like, just add a little percentage possible success to it. And then it may or may not happen, but at least you give you a little bit more percentages towards that.
Right.
I was also thinking, as you were talking about the attention and the life within a team in general with other prospects and the environment, do you feel like that, maybe not necessarily you, but you were there with other prospects as well that were young. Do you feel like in general when there is this point of a prospect's career, that there's this attention, it changes the personality and the perception of yourself to a degree? Like you start seeing yourself maybe in a different manner. And do you feel like it changed, like I said, not necessarily yours, but maybe also other prospects' relationship with the coaches, of being able not to receive criticism because they feel like they're special? Did that change a little bit of the dynamics between the prospect and the coach? Or was that something that just develop with that person anyway?
That's a good question. I would say that there's always a difference between now speaking in a professional term, the head coach or the coaching staff, because I would say most of the prospects would not be in a certain way, cocky towards a head coach, because they're going to get the reaction they're not expecting pretty quick, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So, but I do think that in your environment, so let's talk about maybe farm teams. So here you are coaching or practicing with the professional team, maybe getting your first minutes here and there, being, you know, around great players that may be borderline NBA, maybe even played in the NBA or EuroLeague, whatever. And now all of a sudden you're playing in the third league of a minor division in Germany. And then you're surrounded by regular guys that practice 2 or 3 times a week and just want to have fun. That's where you're really going to prove what your character is all about. So I'm pretty sure that that's where you need good coaches that know how to handle these future maybe star players, and keep them grounded where they know that they still have a long, long way ahead of them before they're actually going to make it.
Humble. And stay, make it, keep them,
yeah,
keep
stay
them
humble. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's something, and a lot of teams are doing a great job in hiring good coaches, giving them a great development and, you know, basically giving them all the tools they need to handle them. But on the other hand, when you see young coaches being 24, 23, 25, and then they're supposed to handle an 18-year-old prospect, not really sure if they have the authority already to really deal with them, you know? So that's something where I think you're going to see the true character of, you know, the prospect. How is he towards his teammates? How is he towards the referees or even the opponents? Like, is he cocky? Is he, like, his body language? Is he going to warm up with the team or just be an outcast? Or so many little details where you can tell, oh, that guy is going to have a tough way ahead of him. And I... You know, I watched some games here in the minor leagues because just, you know, fun, pure fun. And I look at some players that, you know, might be a prospect, and I do my research, and I would like maybe imitate, like pretend that I'm a scout, you know, and just look at the players and kind of like think, what would a scout think of this guy now? You know, everyone's running on the court, warming up with layups, and he's there stretching by himself. Is that what you want to see or no? You know?
There's also certain, I mean, we can talk about it later when we talk about it. I'm still going to gym enough. How there's a certain amount of over scouting as well, where you start over interpreting, and then you start, and you can use it as a question mark and then ask somebody from the coaches or from if that's a regular thing or not. But in general, like, I agree with you that you have to see when it comes to a lower level to the farm team that it's not beneath him. It's not that it's still like he still has to be professional no matter where he plays and goes in. And I had a prospect that I was watching. It was like six, 7 years ago. He's in the NBA now, that he went from the top team. He went to a lower tier, to the farm team, and he's playing an Regionalliga team or Pro B maybe it was. And he was playing the same way. Like, you could see, like, it was just natural that he was competing. He just loved to play. He wanted to win. And it was just like, this guy is going to be successful. He's going to maximize his talent. You look for, like, he's gonna, wherever it would be, whatever the level would be, he'll maximize it. It's just a matter of that if he's gonna make it or not to the top level. Right. But he will get the most out of himself. But you also worked with Holger Geschwindner, who was also the coach of Dirk Nowitzki. Do you remember when it actually happened for the first time? Did he get in touch with you? Did somebody put you in touch with them? How was the relationship with this? Holger Geschwindner was always the personal coach of Dirk. He took him everywhere he went, and also a mentor, like you said. Like, it's important to have that mentor, and Holger was the mentor that Dirk had, and like you said, that you probably needed as well during your career. I mean, Simon was to a certain degree was at that, like, as an assistant coach, was also a mentor. But do you remember working with Holger, and how did it come about?
So my last year in Frankfurt, I had a lot of injuries. People kind of thought that I was pretending to have injuries, although I was hurt. I felt a lot of pain in different body parts, and that really made me not fulfill the expectations. And it was kind of like, I knew, the club knew, that it was not going to go last for a long time. Although I still had a valid contract, it was kind of like where we were just finding a solution to get out of the contract for both sides. And I had a guy that I knew, and I'm still in touch with until this day. Volker is his name. He was just a random guy from the farm team that I knew, and he was like a fan and involved in the club's business. And he kind of like heard what was going on, that I wasn't happy, and, you know, little differences that the club and I had. And he basically connected me with Holger. And I remember that we drove to Würzburg at the time and just had a little workout and talked a little bit. And that was all Holger needed to know that he was going to help me. He helped me. He made sure I had a lawyer to get out of the contract in the right way. He moved me to Bamberg, but he also said, I'll support you. I'll help you with whatever you need. But the only thing you got to promise me, you're going to go to school or do a job, because you're not going to just come here and get everything for free. You got to earn something and make sure that you work on your future life and not just basketball. Mm-hmm. So that was the deal we had. So he organized an apartment for me, a car, a club that I could play for. I even cut his grass on his personal, on his, like his lawn, and made some extra money that way because I was really broke at the time. And he was the guy that set up Nike with me to get some gear and sneakers and whatever I needed. And he just did it because he felt like there's a guy, Freddie, that needs some help. He has no family support, as no financial support, no background. And it's just, he was there for a strange Freddie that he didn't know, but he felt like it was the right thing. So, mm-hmm. You know, we worked out a lot. He watched my games. We talked a little bit. We went to the library together. We did homework together from school. And it was just, I only spent 1 year with him in Bamberg because that's when I joined Cuxhaven afterwards. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like I was ready for the next challenge. But that year really, really helped me as far as knowing that there's more than basketball, and it's about relationships, so much more than people actually think it is.
Then I became Holger.
Yeah, a little louder than Holger, but yeah.
No, but you think Holger would have been there for your first year in Frankfurt and helped you, like, let's say in that role? Not like that would have been probably a much more guiding hand and guided you into the right direction and help you maybe squeeze a little bit more out of it, right? It's like this, it seems like a figure and a person, personality wise, and has the right, has integrity, but has the right value system to implement that into a prospect. I think that's what a mentor needs to have, and that's what talent or prospects and with that attention expect kind of, or should have around them.
Right. Well, so now you just use the term squeeze, and I'm pretty sure that's exactly what Holger never did. Mm-hmm. Where he would not try to make you the best possible basketball player. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. If you need support, he'll support you. But he would not be the guy that would give you the feeling of, well, I did all this for you, you better pay back in a certain way. So he just did it because he is a great guy. Mm-hmm. That's really how I see him until this day.
Naturally.
Right. And I'm pretty sure that my game, I still do some workouts, some of his stuff that he used to do, although they're very old school now, but still, even back then, I remember a lot of coaches, a lot of teams, they didn't really appreciate what Holger did because he was against the mainstream. Mm-hmm. And he coached so many NBA players individually, and teams hire him to do some workouts and maybe have a new perspective. And German teams, some at a certain point, realized that, you know, you can't always go with the flow to be successful. And mm-hmm. So I'm sure a mentor like Holger would have helped me a lot develop, because there would be someone that gave you the feeling of understanding what you're going through without really talking about it. Mm-hmm. And because he's not known for, you know, being the small talk guy, he would just go straight to work, kind of, you know? Yeah. And yeah. So there weren't too many deep talk moments that I had, like maybe we would have had or so.
Yeah.
But he would still, his whole personality and the way he just appears is just, okay, he knows what I'm going through right now, mm-hmm. you know? And it's something
empathetic.
Empathetic, yes. And also, I mean, he's a former national team captain, and he participated, I think, at the Olympic Games or so. I'm not mm-hmm. sure. So he knows what it takes to be a basketball player. Plus, he's a academic and he's a scientist. So mm-hmm. yeah, you know, he knows what he's talking about. Yeah.
He's got a lot of tools in his box. So
for sure. Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah. When was the final straw? When, because you were dabbling, you were from Frankfurt, then you played in second division, Regionalliga. You stopped playing. You went back to Pro A. you went to Regionalliga again in Stade. I remember the path that you went through also afterwards, and you were dabbling back and forth. And I'm sure, like we talked, you had also other offers to continue to play. But what was the final straw when you said, I have to move on, I have to start a new life off the court, and which you did, and which we're going to talk about now, also the success that you found off the court in terms of earning a bachelor's degree, earning a master's degree, finding your way in a different job world, you know, like that you have, like in the open job market, you make yourself a name in that company. When was the final straw when you moved on that you said that that's it, and you were honest to yourself that you need to hang it up, and then going into the commitment of studying and finding a new mm-hmm. career?
Right. So I would say it was in some ways a process that I went through, and it maybe even started already being in Frankfurt. So I lived in Frankfurt from 2002 to 2006. I had a lot of ups and downs. Great experiences, great people I met, great coaches, the whole nine yards, but at the same time, a lot of low points as well. And then the Bamberg experience was very unique, and I'm still thankful for, you know, experiencing what I've experienced. And even then, when I moved to Cuxhaven, it felt like, okay, maybe this is the right environment. And I made the decision to go to a Pro A team instead of a BBL team at the time, because I had offers, but I denied them because I would just, you know, be the 8th, 9th, 10th guy, maybe a practice player. And mm-hmm. I was aware of that. And I really never made me better than I am. It's just, you know, I would have made more money too. It's just, yes. I wanted to play. I wanted to play, and I wanted to be part of a team and not be a standout anymore. I wanted to have my role and do what I'm told to do and do that, and maybe even overachieve that. I don't know.
You just wanted to fit in. You didn't just wanted to fit in.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And also being at the time 21 years old, you know, that was a certain age where you might still be a prospect, but you're more towards a professional player now. And, you know, the first year we had, I was very happy of, you know, what we achieved. We finished second in the league. We made it very far in the cup game, you know, beaten, I think, Göttingen and Leverkusen in the cup. We mm-hmm. were top teams in the BBL. And, you know, I remember I played well those games because those were the kind of players that I really liked playing against that were more organized. But that year also showed me, and I got a pay raise. I signed a new 2-year contract. And I would say that gap, the summer that we had, kind of like gave me too much security for the next 2 years, where I felt like, well, I got 2 years for sure in my contract. And also in my private life, you know, I met my now wife, Saskia, who was also a plan in her future. And to be honest, I really didn't have any alternatives or any other options than playing basketball, because I had the lowest possible school degree in Germany, the Hauptschule. Mm-hmm. And basically finding a job that's going to be above minimum wage is tough with that school degree. It's just the fact. Mm-hmm. And playing basketball always opened doors that I would never dream of before. So I would say the mixture of meeting my now wife and other people that were maybe part of her family, new friends, that really opened, you know, new perspectives as far as, why don't you go back to school? Mm-hmm. You know, well, go back to school for a third time now and, you know, fail again and just prove that I'm a waste. You know, I mean, that's something really you got to ask yourself at a certain point. And I really saw me only going that way if I would not have the burden of being with a professional team anymore and full focus. But at the same time, I needed money. And that's when I decided to go to the Regionalliga team. I could have made more money in the same league at a different team, I'm pretty sure. But I just wanted to fit in somewhere and be, you know, in a good environment, have a coach that believes in me, which was the deal with Matthias back then. He was a great mm-hmm. coach. So that was my last year that I actually played. And that's when I made the decision. I'm really doing this because I don't know anything else to do, you know? So that's when I made the decision. I got to make a cut here and start all over and just, you know, go. Now it's all or nothing, kind of that attitude. And that's when I started going to university. And I also started working my first part-time jobs that were not basketball related. And yeah, so that's when everything started. And it felt very, very good. And also it was a huge relief getting rid of that pressure of, you know, what I mentioned earlier, I have to prove something to someone. You know, playing in the Regionalliga, you would always have the little booklets of the teams, and it would say former standout, Freddie Klimishin, NBA prospect, blah, 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 whatever. And it was like, oh, come on. Like, you can't even go to an East German team now and you know, just play. They got to talk about your past again. And I just didn't want to read all these things anymore. And I just wanted to be one out of, you know, many.
I felt like always also when we were working together that your personality on the court, it was there most of the time. It was congruent with who you are, but it also, the friction the game caused with your personality was visible. And it was like the friction was just caused the frustration, and the frustration caused so much damage. And then it carried over off the court, where you just, you know, like you start to become somebody else, and you would feel like you were fighting somebody inside of you while you were on the court, you know? So it was this constant battle between two personalities that were meeting while they were on the floor. So at the end, I guess, you were honest to yourself and moving on, although it was a burden because there is expectations. You are 6'11", you have this height that's God-given, and you're not using it properly, let's call it. But then you were kind of like making a cut and completely focusing on education and a new career and forgetting everything, not forgetting, but putting it aside. Do you feel like those experiences you had that you had to fight through as you were going through a career, and these struggles, these frictions, these frustrations, do you think they help you to achieve that what you achieve now, to have achieved a master's degree and being a successful businessman in a completely different realm?
I'm pretty sure, yes. So although, you know, I might have not achieved what I was capable of achieving with just the talent that I was given, I was still surrounded by a lot of very competitive people. And even if you're not like, if you're not burning for what you're doing, you're still doing things on a pretty high level. That's, you know, like we're putting, like this whole conversation we're having, if it really sounds like I'm just the lazy guy sitting on the couch all day doing really nothing and just showing up for the game and shooting some threes, but that's not how it was, right? So, I mean, I was in the gym, and if I felt the joy, you could tell, oh, that's the Freddie we could see every time, but, you know, it was just not there all the time. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure being around competitive people, as I mentioned, EuroLeague players, future NBA players, even just professionals, you know, taking their job so serious that analyzing a video, you know, that could be a really competitive thing, believe it or not. You know, it's just, you know, because you're expecting something and you want to be the best at what you're doing right now. And this one play, this one section there might make the big difference in the next game. I mean, that's how
detail oriented work.
For sure, you know, and putting in the extra work, seeing guys that, you know, after practice stay longer to shoot free throws and go to the weight room maybe more often than they should according to their schedule and whatever. Those are little things that, you know, you do witness and you do, and that shapes your character without you really noticing it. So when I went to university, I had class of about 30 hours per week. And also I had a part-time job, which was 20 hours per week. So we're talking, and I maybe might've missed one or two classes during the full 5 years of school. And that's something I'm so proud of on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's like, well, what else do you expect me to do? This is something I want to do. And I would say that's where my competitive nature came out. And It was just something 50 hours per month, per week, plus working on presentations and maybe doing research and whatever papers you got to hand in. That was like something, well, that's part of the deal now, you know? And I didn't see it as a lot. I mean, it was work, but I didn't see it as this is something that's not possible, you know? Mm-hmm. And I would say the same attitude comes towards my work. And no matter what job it is that I worked in after my university time, I put in 120% because I wanted the best for not necessarily me. I mean, also me, but I'm just a team player. And you could tell that this whole attitude thing really makes a difference. And I hope it still makes a difference until this day with the people that are surrounded by you. Right. So
I think the structure that professional athletes, coaches, anybody involved in a professional team that helps to be successful in any other realm outside of sports, just because you are in a competitive environment, you're pushing yourself to unknown limits that in other environments, it's not necessarily the same. And you already, by just pushing yourself a little bit, you're overachieving already in the other realm, just because the standard is so different in terms of like professional environment. It's like soldiers, you know, schedule is on point.
Right.
Everything is the same. And people who don't survive that, it's like a mini army, you know, and then you go into a different realm. It's not as demanding in that aspect, but you demand it from yourself as a former athlete or coach or whoever. You automatically will achieve or maybe overachieve in that realm just because it's just so far above the standard. And I marked myself down these three words, but that I just kind of was thinking as you were talking. There's a difference between being content as a player and just being a part of a team and just being a player and normal functioning within the team. Then there's this passion aspect. That's the next step, where it's just a passionate player who's going to go 100% every time, and it's gonna somehow after off the court, it's gonna relax, do something else, but he's so passionate about the game. And then there's obsession, and there's obsession with the game on the court, off the court, completely immersed in that experience of being a pro athlete or pro coach for that matter. And I think that's when you see these elite successful people, whether it's elite coaches, elite players, that just obsession with that, with that sport. And you still are involved in the sport. So tell everyone what you're still doing, because it tickles me a little bit of you still being involved with the sport in a different environment, let's say. But let's talk to you what you still do as a coach. And also when you still go in the gym, that you still enjoy watching the game. But what do you look for when you go into the game? When you mentioned earlier, you kind of observe and you kind of act like you are a scout. But what are you thinking when you're when you're watching any kind of BBL game, but also what you're doing around right now with basketball?
Well, let me just add one more thing towards work ethic and the regular job world. I'm pretty sure that what also made the big difference in my now daily business that I'm doing is that I'm very grateful for doing something that I'm passionate about and I enjoy doing it. So the basketball time, I would say it's something that people kind of, I don't want to blame other people for what my decisions were, but I think you get the point of what I'm trying to say. Other people kind of told me what's the right thing to do. And the big difference now is that this is my Freddie Klemischen path that I've chosen 100%, and I'm going to back it up whatever it takes. And that's probably the big difference, is that I'm 100% behind my actions. That's only something I want to add, and I'm grateful that I can do something that I'm maybe good at, but at the same time, I'm just passionate about. And that's just something I wanted to add, because I think that really makes the biggest difference in my personal daily basis. So yeah, I mean, I'm still involved with basketball, and after I decided not to play anymore, I was always involved with youth teams, even when I was still active as a player, because I really love being around young players and just being a coach, actually, you know, just for the fun fact of it. And so after coaching men's young boys, I decided to, start
switch gears a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. I started coaching a women's team here in Hamburg. And it was a coincidence because one of my former teammates, his sister, who is coincidentally the wife of my boss, they were looking for a new head coach because their coach left the team or whatever. And I said, well, why not? Why not give it a try? You know, I mean, I never really watched any women's games or, you know, paid any attention to it. So I went there without knowing what's going to, you know, what Freddie and women's basketball kind of match. And what I did realize is that it's actually not about the gender. It's more about, you know, are you involved with basketball? What really, you know, what I really love about the whole thing. And the players that I've coached so far, I've been sticking with the team for the last, I don't know, 4 years, maybe now, 5 years. You know, they really give me so much energy and positive feedback in their own ways of just being loyal to the team, being there at practices, giving 100%, listening to me, kind of like trusting me. That's something I really appreciate, you know, when they trust me. And something I learned about myself is that everything that we've been talking about today is something that I try to live on the court as well, where you're never going to see me yell at players. You're never going to see me punish them during practices like the old Coach Carter style head coaches that would just let you run the whole practice. And I really try to create practices where there is a fun environment, but at the same time, the intensity gets to the max. So that's kind of like what I learned over these last years, being involved with so many great players who were former professional players, even you know, in the women's era, but also just regular hobby players who just enjoy being around a high intensity basketball team. And I had a lot of people come up to me and ask me if I don't want to coach a different team, men's team. Freddie, why are you with the women's team? You could coach maybe a men's team or something. But I turned all the offers down. And we're not talking about big money here. It's more about, you know, what your personal
hobby.
But I'm just happy the way it is. I practice twice a week. We got our game towards the weekends, and you know, we're playing for a championship now again. And it's just something that's enough for me to be involved with basketball and not giving up my passion, but also being able to give something back as far as what I believe in. And when I watch games, I would say, you know, I'm not as detailed as maybe you are in your daily business. I mean, obviously not, because that's your job, but I would just try to see games from a different perspective. And I guess my experience as a player, which you can't really relate to, because men's basketball is somewhat different to women's basketball. But still, in the end, it's about, you know, scoring more than the other opponent and playing defense. So, but still, you know, that's why I hope, and I think that's what the players appreciate of my coaching style.
Yeah. Do you remember the game, the movie Love and Basketball?
Yeah, for sure.
It's a little bit different. Obviously, that I'm trying to find a good finishing note on our conversation, because a lot of times ex-players or ex-prospects, probably especially, have such a disappointment in basketball, and then they just want to, they don't want to have anything to do with it anymore after they leave, you know, just kind of leave it away, even though it was like a love-hate relationship during that time. But would you say it's conducive, and it's maybe even healthy to still contribute and help somehow, or find a niche that you can participate in the basketball and still love life and still have a good life off the court? And would you just kind of combine not love and basketball, but life and basketball, and have both, enjoy both at the same time without having the frustration you felt as a player?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, this is something that every person needs to, answer themselves and really be honest, I guess. But Am I looking at my personal situation now, I can say that everything that I experienced, highs and lows, have basically shaped me the way I am today. And I can say with a good conscience that I'm a very happy person now. And I would probably, maybe I wouldn't like necessarily go the same way that, or, go through the same experiences that I've gone through, because there were some very tough parts of my life, just being mentally very challenged. But at the same time, I would say it is what it is. And that's, it just makes you tougher in a certain way, and also gives you different perspectives on negative sides. So, I would say basketball gives me the balance I need from my daily work pressure that I'm feeling, so I can actually have, experience joy and just be around people that love what they're doing.
It's kind of the opposite of what it was. Like, now you're using basketball to decompress, whereas you used to use life to decompress from basketball. So that's it's I think it's a good finishing statement of yourself. To have to use basketball at the end of the day to decompress from regular life and to be honest to yourself in order to move on to your next stage of your life.
For sure. Yeah.
Freddie,
and go ahead. Say I was just going to say that, I still love watching basketball, being in the gym, watching other teams, whatever level they're playing in and talking about basketball. I mean, we didn't talk about basketball specifically, but at the same time, we did talk about basketball. So that's something I really enjoy. And I appreciate, so many friendships until this day that are still connected to basketball. And, a lot of great guys that I wouldn't have known without, playing through with all those teams that I played for.
Yeah. And our friendship is one of them for sure. Like we created a friendship from a player coach's beginning to now a really, I would say even, we're best friends territory. So it's really easy to talk to you, and I'm proud of you, of what you have accomplished outside of court. You really came a long way knowing from where you came from. And I know more about you than the listeners do. So it's really, you're a prime example of former athletes still finding their ways off the court and still finding a happy life, happy equilibrium off the court. So you're a good example. Thanks for joining. Thanks for coming in. And you did your friend's duties today. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dennis.
All right. Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.